So this morning we're going to begin our subject matter of this retreat. And as you can see on top here, I called my presentation Saintly Sons, because I was thinking what to speak about at the retreat, and I was thinking that most of the people who come are married, so they have children. And so everyone who's married, if they have a son, they would like him to be saintly. And if they don't have a son, then still they like to see saintly boys. So there are two boys who we'll hear about, two exalted personalities, both of whom we can learn from. We can learn very much from. The first one is Prahlad Maharaj. So up here you can look later. I've prepared a small little diorama of Prahlad Maharaj, and then tomorrow we will add move him over to the side and add on the other side a second little diorama of Dhruva Maharaj, who will be the second saintly young boy who we'll hear about. And then for those who are fortunate enough, by way of all their all the blessings of Radha Ballabha, to be here for Monday morning, then they will get a special treat, because then we will speak about the most saintly of all. But in the meantime, we will hear about these very exalted young boys, Dhruva and Prahlad. So I was looking around at the children here today and yesterday, and I saw that some of them are quite young and very delicate. For example, there was one young little girl here, don't know her name, in the kirtan. And I believe she's 3.5 years old, so that's quite young. So Prahlad Maharaj wasn't much taller or older than that. He was only 5 years old. So when you see a five-year-old, you can all make this experiment, because there are children here with us. We have at the back, what's your name again? What's your name? Yes? What's your name? What did you tell me your name was yesterday? Yesterday. Oh, is it a different boy? Oh, well, yesterday we talked to one boy and his name was Prahlad Nishringa Prahlad. And I said, oh, how old are you? And he said, I'm 7 years old. So I thought, okay, all right, we can use him as our example. He's well named. And also we can see him and see what it is like to be such a small boy. Now, when we hear about Prahlad Maharaj, you might find in some differences between their behavior. Because one of the specialities of Prahlad was that he wasn't interested in childish play. And Srila Prabhupada explains that practically every young boy is very playful at that particular age. And so this was an exception in Prahlad's case. Now, when hearing about Prahlad, it's very important, first of all, to understand the setting in which this pastime is taking place. So at the beginning, now what we also, I'll give you a little information about my seminar. So this morning I will speak on the story, the Leela, the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. And this afternoon, if those who are fortunate enough again to have been able to bring some Bhagavatam, Canto 7 and 4 with them, we'll go over some of his statements, how he thought and how he spoke. But first of all, we would like to hear something of his life. And then tomorrow we'll do similarly with Dhruva Maharaj. In the morning we'll hear the Leela, and in the afternoon we'll hear about how he responded when he received the reward that he was seeking very ardently from Lord Vishnu. So in the seventh canto is the beginning of the story of Prahlad Maharaj. And it begins with an exchange between Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj has just performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. And if we remember, in that particular sacrifice, as the king, he had to choose who was the first person to offer this sacrifice towards. And he chose Krishna. And at that sacrifice, one person stood up and became furious at this choice. Who knows who that was? Shishupal. Shishupal stood up and he started saying all kinds of things. Why did you choose him? Why did you make him the first person to receive the sacrifice? He's like this, like this, like that, like that. He's this kind of a person. He's a rascal. He's a cheater. He's a fool. He went on and on and on and on speaking. And everyone in the assembly was horrified because it was so inauspicious. Just if somebody came in right now and started shouting at all the devotees, we'd feel very uncomfortable. So they all felt very uncomfortable, and Krishna sat there very calmly listening to Sisupal, and at a certain point he picked up his Sudarshan Chakra and he whisked the Sudarshan Chakra and Sisupal's head fell. So why did he do it? Why did he listen and listen and all of a sudden he responded in this way? There is a great story behind this Leela. But Yudhisthira Maharaj was asking Narada Muni some questions. And one of his questions was, because he had been hearing from him and he had seen this, that Sisupal stood up and spoke so many harsh words and at a certain point Krishna finished him. So he asked him this question, is the Lord partial or is he impartial? Does he favor some people and he disfavors others? Because if this is the case, this goes against the idea that he's equal to everyone. And if he's not equal to everyone, why not? So this is a very good question, because sometimes we will feel that we haven't been favored by the Lord. So this question is answered in the beginning of the seventh canto very nicely. But to continue on with Narada's comments, he starts to tell him a story. And he begins by telling him how Sisupal was actually one of the gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, and this was all an arrangement of the Lord. Then he starts to begin to narrate the story of Hiranyakashipu. And he tells Yudhisthira Maharaj how in the very beginning, Hiranyakashipu and his brother Hiranyaksha were both very, very powerful, and Lord Vishnu killed Hiranyaksha. And so Hiranyakashipu took a vow, and his vow was that he would become the enemy of Vishnu, and in some way or another he wanted to kill him. But first it's interesting to note that when the queens and his mother Diti and the wife of Hiranyaksha and also the children of Hiranyaksha, when they were all lamenting the death of their father or their husband or their son, he spoke very philosophical words. And he explained to them, you should understand the difference between the soul and the body, and this you have to. And then he told them a story about Yamaraj, when one king died and his queens were crying so much they wouldn't allow the funeral ceremony to take place. And Yamaraj disguised himself as a little boy and he came there and he said, what are you all doing here crying like this? And he made some very philosophical words come from his mouth, and the queens understood the nature of the soul as opposed to the nature of the body, alive or dead. And so Hiranyakashipu, he explained this whole story to the queens, to the bereaved relatives. And when they became pacified and they felt, yes, this is actually the truth, and life is eternal and we should not lament in this way, then instead, because remember he is asura, he has a demoniac mentality, he didn't actually, interestingly, he spoke this very nice philosophy to them and they all accepted it, but he didn't actually live by that philosophy. Instead, immediately he left the palace and decided, I will perform austerity, and the austerities that I will perform will give me the power, and through this power, by these austerities, then I will retaliate for the death of my brother. So he spoke very nice philosophy, but actually in his heart he had something different. So he went to perform these austerities. And it was very interesting because he stood on his toes, as we know. He stood, just imagine trying to do this. If we don't have any young children here, we can't have them do it. But if you stand on your toes, put your hands up in the air, looking upward, standing on your toes. How long can you stay like that? Maybe if you were very, very, very strong until breakfast time. And when breakfast came, you would stop. Well, he stood on his toes, not until breakfast, not for one day, not for 1 week, not for a year. He stood on his toes 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, in the same position. He stood on his toes for 100 years. 100 years, that's longer than our lifespan. And not 100 years of our time, but 100 years of the lives of the demigods, which is a huge amount of time. He stood like this, fixed. He was so fixed and so determined. But what did he want? He had a desire. He wanted four things. First of all, he wanted to reverse. He wanted to become eternal. This was his primary aim. I want to live forever in this body. Second thing, he wanted to be able to reverse the results of pious activities and impious activities. Just think about that for a minute. He wanted that if you do impious activities, you would get rewards. If you do pious activities, you would suffer. He wanted that. This was his second thing he wanted. Then he wanted to overturn all the established principles in the world. And the last thing he wanted was that he wanted to make the position of Vaishnavas very insecure.
Insecure.
So when you look at modern society, you can see that there is a strain of this Hiranyakashipu in the way that they're managing things. They would like things like this. So to do this, to get all these things, he concluded that he should gain the position of Brahma, to be the topmost, very top person in the whole universe, and then he would gain this power. So he stood like this. And he started to create a great disturbance because fire started coming out of his head. And the whole universe was perceiving by his power of his mystic yoga that fire was coming up and they were feeling very hot and uncomfortable. And the demigods noticed this and they went to Lord Brahma and they said, "You should be very careful. We have heard that he wants to take your position, so you should stop him." So then Lord Brahma came. He said, "I know he wants to meet me, so I will come and meet him." So he came down from his planet on his swan aeroplane, and there he saw the most amazing thing. He saw that there was a skeleton standing there. Not a person, but a skeleton. No flesh, no organs, no blood, no veins. No digestive tract, none of the things that we're familiar of with the mechanisms of a body. They had all over this time evaporated and disappeared. And he was keeping the air of his life within this skeleton form. And when Lord Brahma saw this, he was absolutely amazed that somebody could do this. Because we see that somebody, if they meet with a severe accident, they fall from a great height, or something very painful happens to them, the soul is so inconvenienced in the body that it immediately is forced to leave that body because it is such a painful state. But his whole body has disintegrated and he's still standing there like this, waiting for Lord Brahma to come. So Lord Brahma came, and when he saw him, he fell too under the influence of his austerities. He was so impressed. Just like we may all sit here and say, and we hear about how such and such a person is a demoniac person, and such a person has done so many cruel things, and such a person is like this and that, until we all think this person is greatly infamous. And then when the person walks in, they have a charisma, and we all go, and we start looking at them, even though we've heard all horrible things. If a person is greatly powerful, we become attracted. Because this is some of the attractive power of Krishna himself. And we must remember that this Hiranyakashipu is himself one of the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. So he is much more powerful than anyone else within the universe. Because he has come for a particular purpose, which is to fight. Because the Lord wants to fight, he's come to fight. So how powerful he is and how powerfully he's going to fight. So there he was, and Lord Brahma came under his power and asked him, "What do you want?" When he asked him what he wanted, he first of all glorified him with wonderful terms. And if you read in the Bhagavatam, the prayers of Hiranyakashipu to Lord Brahma, you'll see that he calls him Bhagavan. And all the prayers are offered as if he's the Supreme Lord. Because he doesn't want to accept Lord Vishnu. He's angry with Lord Vishnu. He's hateful towards Lord Vishnu. And so he has designated a lower post to be the supreme position. And he's praying very nice prayers. But in his heart, he wants that position. So he's seeking benedictions from this person so he can have their post. So Lord Brahma listens to all of his prayers. And at the end, he explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he begins to realize, because Lord Brahma says to him that you belong to the human beings. So you cannot be eternal, but ask for me whatever you want. And so then he begins to realize that, oh, he can't give me eternality. It's not available to me in this form. So he begins to think, and he's highly intelligent, and he goes through a long list of things that he wants, and in his calculating mind he's thinking, if I get all these things, it's so close to being eternal that it's practically the same. So he says, I don't want to be killed, I don't want to meet death by anyone created by you. I don't want to die inside a house or outside a house, because he fears that maybe I'll have a natural death and that people die on their bed. So he says, I don't want to die in the house. I don't want to die outside the house. I don't want to die in the day. That's all day. I don't want to die at night. So he goes on. He says, I don't want to die on the ground. I don't want to die in water. I don't want to die in the sky. I don't want to die by any weapons, because he knows that previously his brother was killed by Lord Varaha by a weapon, so he doesn't want to die by any weapon. I don't want to die by any human being, because Lord Vishnu is a human being. I don't want to die by any animal, because he came as Varaha Dev. So he says, I don't want any animals to kill me either. I don't want to die in any country, in any space, anywhere, at any time. He's pretty he's pretty all-inclusive. He says, I don't want the demigods to be able to kill me. I don't want any living entity, living or dead, to kill me. I don't want any snakes to kill me. I don't want to die on a battlefield. And I don't want to have any competition. I want no rivals. I want to be the top. And then he explained what he wants. He says, give me sole rulership, one, me, over all the living entities and presiding deities. And give me all mystic powers attained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, which can never, ever, ever be lost. I want all of that. So Lord Brahma hears this, a powerful request. He's performed a powerful austerity to get a powerful position, to have no rival, no one can kill him, no fear of death from anywhere. And Lord Brahma says to him that this is very difficult to obtain what you're asking. But he says, my son, I will give it to you even though it is generally not available. So Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas warn us in the purport that just as opulence takes strength and endeavor to achieve, maintaining it also takes a great deal of effort. So he explains that sometimes a great benediction becomes a great curse, because you have to have the power now, you've got the power, now you have to maintain that position, which is a great endeavor. He gave the benediction and he departed. And Hiranyakashipu now became so powerful, he immediately went to the heavenly planets and he took over the position of Indra, and he lived there in the beautiful gardens there, and he drank wine all day and sported with beautiful young women, and he had so much pleasure, and he was all the time enjoying whatever there was to enjoy. He enjoyed it fully. He had such a powerful enjoying spirit. He lived in Indra's palace. And everyone except Lord Brahma, Vishnu and Lord Shiva had to worship him. All the demigods had to come and bow down to him. And Narada Muni, who's telling this story, says, even I used to come and bow down to him. And I would sing songs on my veena to glorify him. Because he was so powerful. His power nobody could match. So, he said, even Narada said, I took all offerings to him and everything ran very nicely. He was so powerful that he took away the power of the water, heat and wind from the demigods and managed it himself. This is something we can't imagine because the wind blows and we just think it's wind, and fire burns and that's fire. And water's water. What is the difficulty? They're just there. But there are demigods, powerful personalities who regulate these different elements. And he took all that into his own hands. So he was so powerful. But still, because he was proud and transgressions of the laws of material nature, he had only one enemy. Does anyone know who that enemy was?
Lord Vishnu.
No. Yes, but no. Who was his enemy? No.
Greed.
Not greed, not his son. No.
His own mind.
His own mind, his uncontrolled senses. Actually, he had six enemies. He could not control his senses. So because he could not control his own mind and his own senses, actually, he wasn't actually in control as a conqueror. Even though he could control everything outside, had been given to him as his domain, but he couldn't control inside. Couldn't control anger, couldn't control greed, couldn't control lust, couldn't control envy. So there he was. Now, the demigods began to see that he was starting to do all kinds of horrible things. He was stopping all the sacrifices. He was offending Brahmins. He was doing so many demoniac things to interrupt the workings of the universe as he had wanted and as he had planned and as he had received the power to do. So the demigods became very unhappy and they went to the Supreme Lord Vishnu and they told him of their unhappiness. And he told them, don't worry, very soon I shall go and I shall stop him. So go back to your positions, do whatever you have to do, wait patiently, go on with whatever your activities are, and I will take care of this. So then it's described that because he said to him, he will be all right, he will have his power until he does one thing, until he starts to disturb his young son Prahlad. And when he disturbs Prahlad, then he will be destroyed. I will destroy him. So he had four sons, Ranikashipu, and of them Prahlad Maharaj is considered the best. So as we hear Prahlad, he was just a five-year-old little boy, but he had so many wonderful, natural, good qualities. One of the things was that he didn't play very much and he used to remain very silent and he was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. He couldn't understand. Now, sometimes young children can't understand so many things. They can't understand how electricity works. They can't understand so many things. But he couldn't understand how the world goes on not being fully absorbed in Krishna. He couldn't understand that. And the other thing he couldn't understand, like if I tell you some mathematical problem you can't understand, but he couldn't understand how people thought in terms of friends and enemies. He couldn't comprehend this. He didn't think like that. Now Prahlad, as we're going to hear about his wonderful qualities, he's on the Uttama Bhakti platform. He appeared in this world by the mercy of Narada. He heard so many teachings when he was just young within the womb But he appeared completely exaltedly liberated on the topmost transcendental platform. So this is one very significant point about him. As opposed to, and I'm going to ask you tomorrow at the end of our fourth seminar, to share with together some of the similarities and dissimilarities between these two boys. So remember this, that Prahlad was born like this. He couldn't understand. He already loved Krishna. He saw Krishna everywhere. When he saw Krishna would leave, he would start to cry and tremble. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And he had a very secret inner world, which was him and Krishna. And when he would see him again, he would laugh, apparently for no good reason. He would laugh, he would cry. Sometimes he would appear something like a mad person. But he would act in this way because he had this very internal world in which he was absorbed totally in Krishna. But how did he behave externally? He behaved as a very quiet, very well-mannered, very gentle son of Hiranyakashipu. So his father didn't even notice. He was very quiet, submissive. He saw his father and his teachers because he didn't see friend and enemy. Now here's the difficulty. We see friend and enemy. Everyone sees. This discrimination is there. This person has said something very harsh about me. They're not my friend. And this person always helps me in so many ways. They're my friend. And this person suddenly did this. Oh, that's not my friend. And this person, oh, they're my friend. And we're always seeing like this. This is the position of the conditioned soul. He's always seeing in the platform of duality. Good, bad, praise, criticism, favorable, unfavorable, hot, cold. They're seeing in this way. And Prahlad didn't see in this way. So as we hear him speaking, sometimes we will think, that just sounds like the philosophy I hear all the time. I can't relate to that. And the reason is because we think in this way, and so when we're hearing something, it's theoretical. It's philosophical. Philosophical means theoretical. It's trying to get you to come up. You think like this, no, think like this. But we still think like this. So it remains theoretical. But it wasn't theoretical for him. His concepts were totally different than our own. So it's very important to understand this because it will give you some insights into the magnitude, the exalted nature of saintly consciousness. And this makes us, Srila Prabhupada says that when we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, it takes us above all the miseries of materialistic life. And any of us, and all of us know the miseries of material life. There are joys and excitements and pleasures and satisfaction, but there are also miseries and frustrations and turbulence as well. So by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing about these saintly, tranquil personalities, it does something to our own hearts, which we are desperately in need of. So Prabhupada says we must go therefore further and further into spiritual understanding. So Prahlad, he saw his father, because he doesn't see friends and enemies, as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His father was so demoniac, drunk all the time, associating with women, doing so many things, cruel, powerful, mean. He didn't see that. This is very extraordinary. And he saw his teachers in the same way. So when he went to school, he listened to them. But he saw no meaning in what they were teaching. But he didn't rebel and tell them, you're all crazy, you should understand. He didn't do that. He sat very peacefully in the class. And in the meantime, he had a deep inner life, which was all centered around Krishna. So there he was going to school day after day learning. And what was he learning? He was learning in a very sophisticated, subtle, opulent way what people learn today in school. He was learning how to make money because that's the most important thing about education. Education means how to make money, right? You go to school, you learn so many things, and basically you're coming to university level and then you learn to make money. And education is for that. And you become a doctor or a lawyer or something, and you've been successful. Your life is good. He learned how to make money. He also learned politics because he was a prince. That means how to make divide and rule, to make this person an enemy, friend, so on and so forth. He learned all the Rajniti. So he was learning this. He learned also about how to enjoy life, because if you don't enjoy, that's the purpose of life, is to have an enjoyable life. What do you do otherwise? You have to have an enjoyable life, you have to do whatever makes you happy. So he learned that. And then he also learned probably something about liberation of some sort. So this is dharma, artha, karma, moksha. This is the purpose of life for most people, these four things. But he was situated completely on a different plane. And there he was, being taught and taught and taught. And one day he came home and his father picked him up on his lap, such a cute little boy. Like we see this one little girl back there, Radhesham's daughter. She's just a little younger than how old Prahlad was. If you have take a look at her and you think, if you pick her up on your lap and you say to her, what did you learn in school today? She might go, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And everyone laughs and thinks, isn't that cute? And she's so sweet. And then you play with her a little bit and give her something to eat and feel very satisfied, and warmth in the heart comes to the parents. So there, his father asked him, what did you learn in school today? Now, he had an answer for his father that was very simple. He told his father what he learnt. Let me see if I can find this verse quickly. And he said this to his father with no fear. He said, Prahlad said, this is, if for those who have a book, this is page 221, Canto 7, text 5. He said, basically, O best of the Asuras, he called his father the king of demons, I learned from my spiritual master, Guru, because teachers are respected, that anyone who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. Now just think who he's talking to here. He says, one should give up this position. He's number one. He says, you should give up this position, go to the forest. And Prabhupada adds, more clearly, one should go to Vrindavan, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent, and should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Means Lord Hari or Lord Vishnu. He told him, you're embarrassed. you're in an embarrassing position. You should give up your position and go to the forest and worship Vishnu. When he told his father this, in a very simple, innocent way, not like, now's my chance to tell him. Not like that. He was just sharing what he had learned, what he was doing in school. He was thinking this way. He just shared it very simply with his father. And how do you think his father felt? Quite horrified, the answer is. And he immediately called for his teachers and said, where has he learnt this from? Did you teach him this? And they were horrified too, and they said, no, we don't teach anything like this. And then he said, send him back to school, protect him, make sure nobody can influence him in this way, and make sure you can correct him. And so they said yes. So they took him back to school. They were very shocked, and they said to him, where did you learn this? And he said, I just know this, he said. And he just described as he said to them, he said, just as iron and a magnet come together, I'm just naturally attached to the Supreme Personality. It's natural. I just think like this. And he told them, I'm amazed that you think friends and enemies. I never see friends and enemies. Everyone's a servant of God. So they didn't ask him any more questions. They didn't want to know what he thought. They started teaching him again and teaching him, and very submissively he learnt again. And so very quietly he was there, and then sometime later they brought him again. And his father tried again, picked him up, tried it again. His mother dressed him very nicely. What did you learn in school today? And he starts telling them, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu, Pada, Sevanam. He goes through the whole process of devotional service without any fear to his father. And then his father is like absolutely furious at this point. What is this? You're just supposed to have learned all of these things and you've learned like this? And he calls the teachers. The teachers come. And he gets very furious and threatens to kill them. They say, we didn't teach him this. It's natural. He just does this. We don't know what to do with him. So then he tries to kill him, as we know. We know this story very well. He tries in all sorts of different ways to kill the little boy. So just imagine if you start, your dear son, your dear daughter, any of the mothers or fathers who are here, imagine if the next day you think, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill her. How can I kill her? And you try all kinds of ways. Not only just you thinking in frustration for a moment, but he calculatedly thought, he's my enemy. I can't control him anymore. He has to die. And he justified it. He said, you know, when you get some gangrene in your hand, you have to amputate it to save your life. So he's become like that in our family. He's become a friend of our number one enemy. So he has to be amputated. We have to kill him. So he tried various methods to try to kill the little boy. And Prahlad always simply was just thinking about Krishna. He didn't actually notice what his father was doing. He would try to poison him, throw him off the top of a cliff. He would put him with snakes, and the snakes would come all around him. He had rakshasas with spears trying to poke him and stab him, and he didn't become fearful. Isn't this amazing? I mean, we can think, oh, that's a far-out story, but just think for ourselves. Imagine what it would might be like not to be fearful. Some people who have suppressed their fears very, they keep them subconscious. They say, I'm not a fearful person. Some people who are very aggressive think, I'm not a fearful person. I can take on the world. But if you look at them very carefully with a magnifying glass, you'll see that they're full of fear. They're full of fear. Everyone, by definition, has a different way of dealing. And this is called the struggle for survival, struggle for existence in this material world. Because the body is so perishable. So as he said, Prahlad said in the beginning, anyone who has an attachment for their body and their temporary family situation must be embarrassed with anxiety, because the body, it's not even ours, it can't stay. He wasn't afraid. So they did everything, all the nastiest ways that you would think to murder somebody. And finally, the nastiest one that he tried was he called his own mother, Kayadu, Prahlad's mother, and said, put this poison in his food. Just imagine the mother having to put poison in her own son's food. And she was obliged to do this, and she put the poison in his food, and he offered it. And when he offered it, it became prasad, and he just took it. Just like it went, no problem, he took it, and it had no effect on him, no ill effect. And then Hiranyakashipu became very morose and concluded that if I have done so many things to try to kill this child and he can't be killed, he must be very saintly. And I must now be ready to meet my death because I've been torturing this innocent boy. But then the teachers came to encourage him. Don't feel like that. Don't feel so bad about yourself. Everything's fine. Don't worry. It's all right. We'll just take him back. And we'll keep teaching him. He's a little boy. He'll grow out of all of this. Don't be so over the top. You know, he'll be all right. We'll just take him back to school. We'll teach him some more. And so they took Prahlad and they brought him back to the school. And as we know, in the school, the boys asked him questions because they saw all of this. And they asked him questions about what he thought. And he began to explain to them how he viewed life. He criticized those who are searching for money as the honey of life. He criticized, because he's in the palace with all these demoniac family members, those who are only interested in their family and have no time for God. And he criticized so many different things to them very strongly, but like a little boy, not like a heavy, harsh powerful man dictatorially, but just like a little child is criticizing so many things. I don't like that, that's not good, and that's not good, and this is really nice. A little innocent child. And he moved them and changed them so much by his teaching. And then he told them something very nice. I'll see if I can find it. He said, my dear friends, I'm not going to find this because we have to go a little quickly. He said, if you can place your faith in my words, simply by that faith, you can also understand transcendental knowledge just like I can. If you put your faith in my words, although you are small children, anyone can understand transcendental knowledge and know what is spirit and what is matter. So Prabhupada explains that this is very, very important to understand what is spiritual and what is matter. Because by understanding this, we can increase our attachment for spirit and decrease our attachment for matter. So the question may arise, does that mean that all of my possessions are material and I have to give them all up? How can I do that? I have my family and all my responsibilities. I must give all of this up? No, but one must understand that one must have the proper conception of life. If you have the right concept, then everything becomes spiritual. If you have the wrong concept, then your attachment for it is material. If you think that this is mine, and this is mine, and this is also mine, then you're seeing it materially. If you think that actually this all belongs to Krishna, and somehow or other he's given these things into my care to use, to please and serve him, then the very same things become spiritual. So Srila Prabhupada explains that one should, by hearing, one should hear, and in this way what will happen is gradually the material part of our consciousness will lessen, and as the material side becomes reduced, the spiritual side will increase. So this is why we have to hear and hear and hear and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam as much as we can. So as we know, then the teachers found out that all the boys had become Vaishnavas as well, and then they were really furious and they took him back to his father and said, you take him, we don't even want him. He's ruined our school, he's spoiled everything in the palace, they didn't want to have anything to do with him anymore. And then was when Hiranyakashipu decided, I'll kill him myself. Nobody else has been successful, I'll kill him myself. So then, as we know, he took up his sword and he said, I'm going to kill you myself. You are like a dog's tail. A dog's tail. Dog's tails are like that. And you straighten a dog's tail and it goes like that. You straighten it, it goes like that. He said, you are like a dog's tail that can't be straightened. And then he said to him, because he was curious, he saw that he was fearless. He wasn't frightened of his father. He wasn't going like this, no, 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 like a dog. No, 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 no. He was just sitting there peacefully with his father, who was like in a rage. And he said, where do you get your power from to defy me? I'm the most powerful person. How do you get this power? And Prahlad, very peacefully and very quietly, he said, I get my power from the same place that you get your power. Without Krishna, nobody has any power. And then Hiranyakashipu raised his sword, and as he was about to kill him, he said, okay, you say that there's a God, you say all of these things, is he, and he points with his sword, is he in this pillar? Is he there? And Prahlad says, yes, he's there. And then Lord Nrisimhadeva leaps out of the pillar, and after a mighty battle, because this was his intention, he killed Hiranyakashipu. Then his anger was so great that nobody was sure whether he was going to also destroy the whole universe. And Brahma was afraid. And Lord Vishnu was afraid. No, Brahma was afraid. Lakshmi was afraid. She didn't think this was her husband. So she wouldn't come near to offer any prayers. And so Lord Brahma asked Prahlad Maharaj, please go and offer some prayers to pacify the Lord. And at that point, we're going to stop. Because this afternoon, we're going to hear some of the prayers that were offered by Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrisimhadev that pacified his anger and instead induced in him a completely different rasa, a different mood, a mood, a loving, paternal mood towards this little boy, the natural mood that would be evoked by a small child who was lovingly offering you words of glorification. So, Keshava, what time do we have to complete?
You can take questions and comments for 10 minutes.
All right. Okay, so we can take some questions and comments for 10 minutes. Otherwise, we can hear some other verses from what Prahlad Maharaj spoke to the schoolboys. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
So how is it possible that Hiranyakashipu, he was, could control the whole universe, but he could not control his own senses?
Because his desire to control the universe was for his own enjoyment. So the Prabhupada, when I was reading through this, there were some things that struck me that he said as I was reading through in preparation for this particular part. And somewhere he says that everyone who comes into this material world comes into this world for the purpose of enjoying like God. We want the position that he has. And that's why it's so difficult for us to become advanced devotees. Because in the core of the heart, we have an issue. We've come here to enjoy. So if you want power and the topmost position, you want the topmost position of enjoyment. So that's, I thought about that also when it described he's so powerful, 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 but he's so weak in this other way. I thought, why would he have to be weak? You know, why not be powerful there as well? But if he could control his senses, he wouldn't want that position. Because what would he do with the position? You think about it for a minute. Mm-hmm. What's he going to do in heaven? Heaven is for heavenly pleasure. What's he going to do when he achieves all of this might and strength and he wants to control this and dominate this? He's going to want to dominate. Right? So as soon as he's dominating, this is the irony, it's like ironic that when a living entity comes into this world, they come here with a desire to be independent of Krishna. And when we pray that Krishna will, God will help us to be independent of him. And that's by definition faulty. If you're praying for something, you're dependent on that person. Because we can't live without the air and the water and the sun and the light. So there's a disloyal inclination in the heart of every conditioned soul that is exposed when they come even when they become in the beginning of their religiousness, religiosity. Generally, religiosity is to pray to God, please, you make everything in my life nice. Please take away that problem and fix this, and please, I'll do this for you if you'll do this for me. This is in the Sanskrit, this is called Satam Kama Yoga. I'm doing things, I give you something, and you should give me this. And as long as one has that concept, that idea in the mind, when they're trying to become a devotee even, they can't get very far because they've got a concept that I give this and you give this. And this is even enhanced in most religions of the world, this idea. I remember one time being at my mother's house and there was some television program televised from a Hollywood religious program. So everyone was beautiful and they had beautiful teeth and they were all smiling and the ladies had their hair like this and they were smiling with bouquet here, you know, they were saying to the audience in this beautiful environment, you know, can anyone testify to their faith? And someone would stand up and say, and it was real, I mean, were they really doing it? I prayed to the Lord that my son would become a doctor, and he did. And then they all clapped, like, and then anyone else. And so a little boy would get up, I prayed for a bicycle, and I got it. And their faith was enhanced by this, because that was what their concept was. This is what religion is for. So Krishna consciousness is something totally way beyond that. And that's why it's hard for us. Krishna consciousness is turned as if it's like a telescope. We're looking with the big end up, and Krishna consciousness far, far away. And when we turn it the other way around, Krishna consciousness is very near. Because now we're looking, what's the difference? The turnaround is, I want to please you, not you should please me. And so this is a big thing, and it's not an easy thing to do. So Hiranyakashipu wasn't interested in that, so therefore he had the telescope way the other way. So because God is way out of the picture, what else is he going to do? He'll have to find his enjoyment in his power and position, therefore his senses will be uncontrolled. And therefore he'll actually be weak, even though he will appear externally powerful, and people will admire his power, they see his power. But in that position, one's actually internally weak. So this is the irony of material life. When we try to get more powerful, we get more powerful on one side, but we get weaker on the other. When we try to turn this direction around, that I want to please you, I don't know how to, but I want to please you by my activities, we feel as if we get weaker. Because we're not in control anymore. We're not the controller of everything. But actually we're gaining power. And a good example of that is if you take a tape recorder, or nowadays a CD player, or nowadays maybe an iPod, and it plays on its own portable battery. But the battery runs out at a certain point. It only has a certain life, and then you have to recharge it, and that only has a certain life. But when you plug it into the outlet, it can play all day. Without any difficulty, because it's plugged in. And now the power is coming from the electric source, and so it can go on and on and on, and you can listen to it for an indefinite time. But when it has, so I have this power pack, and with my power pack I can do this, 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 and this, but then it runs out. So this is material consciousness. Spiritual consciousness is, I want to be plugged in. I want to somehow or other give my faculties for the pleasure of Krishna, that he may use them. And then the happiness that comes is of a completely different kind. Because it becomes, as we hear, Krishna consciousness is unlimited. And we have limited happiness. So we multiply our limited happiness by unlimited. It doesn't seem very nice. And people say, I don't want to go to heaven because they're all happy all the time. It would be boring. You have to have some unhappiness. And we, sometimes we tease people for that, laugh at that. But actually it's true. It's true because in the spiritual world, but it's transcendental rasa. Krishna comes and he leaves. And then they feel unhappiness. Then they feel happiness. There has to be this separation, happiness, unhappiness. But in the spiritual world, because it's all centered around Krishna, it's all happiness. Even the separation from Krishna increases the love for Krishna. And the happiness that they feel in sadness. But in the material world, the same thing comes down. I need my happiness. I need some sadness to break the monotony of my happiness. So when you say eternal, people think eternally that? That's not very interesting. Let me do something else. So we have to understand properly the difference between material and spiritual. Thank you. Any other points?
We say that asuras means those are favorable to Krishna, and asuras those are not favorable to Krishna. But in other sense, we have also heard people saying, giving examples that Prahlad and Bali Maharaj, they are asuras, though they are devotees.
Yes.
So these asuras, saying them, is it something their lineage which is represented, or it means their consciousness? As a devotee or non-devotee?
I mean both. When they say born in the family of demons, that means their lineage. They're born in the family of aditi, adityas and adityas, or asuras and asuras. But then it also means that those who have a particular mentality are of this are on this side and those who have a different mentality are there. And Prahlad will say later when he's talking to Lord Nrisimhadev that please don't give me anything. He's saying, what do you want? You pleased me so much by your devotion, I want to give you something. Please don't give me anything. I'm born in the family of Asuras. I'm an Asura. If you give me something, I'll just get attached to it and I'll get all materialistic. Please don't give me anything. So in his humility, he sees himself as an Asura. But by his, one can understand somebody by their behavior. So by his behavior, he's only in the lineage. He's not of the mentality of an Asura. Any, yes.
Srila Prabhupada said that he is Nityasiddha. Prahlad is Nityasiddha.
Yes. So actually, practically speaking, in this pastime, Prahlad already has all of this transcendental knowledge. He appears with it. He says out of his humility, I learnt it in the womb from Narada. So his spiritual master is Narada Muni. And again, when speaking to Lord Nrisimhadev, he says, how can I leave my spiritual master? My spiritual master gave me everything. My spiritual master is Narada. So he says like that because he is teaching. But he came with all of this Uttam Adhikari platform, exalted transcendental knowledge. So when we hear about him, we can appreciate his character and his exalted qualities, but we can't imitate them. Just like when we were coming here actually on the plane, because I have been reading and thinking, I don't think like this. I think completely differently than this. So I asked my husband, we were walking onto the plane, again in that airport atmosphere, which is quite invasive and very, very materialistic. I said, how can you actually not see friends and enemies? And he said, he just looked at me and he said, that's Uttam. Mm-hmm. That's the Uttam platform. So then I said, well, how do we see? He said, we see on the Madhyam platform. Or if we're just beginners, we see on the Kanista platform. A beginner sees these are devotees and those are demons. They're bad and they're good. And that's not meant to stay like that. Then as one advances further, his discrimination develops. He can see those people are innocent. They're just innocent, ignorant. It's very similar. They're over there. These people are hardcore Asuric. They really hate. They have a remnants in them. These people are devotees trying to become, coming upward. And then there's a Supreme Person, Supreme Personality. I befriend him. He's my friend. Then I try to, I worship him, I befriend them, I teach them, I try to show compassion to them, I avoid them. But on the Uttam platform, he only thinks, I'm the only one who's fallen. I'm the only one with horrible qualities. And he sees either that they're serving Krishna or that Krishna is working through them. These are the two ways he looks at people. So he sees, I have no enmity with them. So this is very extraordinary to see like that. Just like someone may say, King Kamsa, he's so wonderful. If it wasn't for King Kamsa, then Krishna would not appear. He's so great. This is the Uttam platform. We see he's a demon. He's a Suric and we shouldn't be like him. So yes, this is his position. He will reveal to us what the Uttam, their understanding is. But as I say, it depends on your conception, and your conception depends on your consciousness, and your consciousness depends on how much you become free from the modes of ignorance and passion. The stronger the ignorance and passion is, the more difficult it is to see like this, because the more the brilliant qualities of the soul are obscured. And therefore, all of our practices, everything we do are to encourage one to try to move towards this, try to move towards illumination, towards the mode of goodness in this sense. And how do we do this if we're in the modes of ignorance and passion? Then Bhagavad Gita becomes essential. We must understand Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita platform tells us, use everything in Krishna's service. Offer it. Make an offering of this. Make an offering of that. Don't do it only for yourself. Then you have uncontrolled senses. Do it for Krishna. This will control your senses. So this is the platform. These are the steps to come to this Uttama platform. So everyone can do it, wherever they are, whether they're heavily controlled by ignorance and passion or whether they're not, whether they're illuminated by goodness. They still have a position on that ladder upwards, and they should do what they should do in order to go forward or upward. Any other points? Yes.
How was Hiranya Kashyapu able to perform the austerities if he didn't have sense control?
How was he able to perform austerities? Sense control doesn't mean that you can't perform austerity. I mean, nonsense control doesn't mean that you can't perform austerity. You can work very hard. You can control your senses in that way. I want to take all my power and do this. But what do you want as a result? When you get that, you enjoy it. So as soon as the purpose of your austerity is enjoyment, as soon as you start enjoying, you've lost control of your senses.
So he could perform it in the beginning,
wasn't he? He could perform it any time that he wanted, but the result, whatever he got was, he put it invested into enjoyment. So we may do something, work very hard, and make a lot of money, so working very hard, very industrious, and then we spend it all. Something like that. We can make more money, we can work again, but if we spend it all, we spend it all. Yes.
What you are saying, you make a lot of money and then spend it. So what you are saying in the lecture also, yukta vairagya means use. Can you explain what is yukta vairagya?
Yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya, the first thing that you have to have if you want to work for the pleasure of Krishna is you have to have a sense of relationship. And if you don't have a sense of relationship, who he is, how can you work for him? Just like if you may work very hard for your family because they're very dear to your heart, because you have a feeling, this is my family. If I told you you should work very hard for whoever's sitting on the left or right of you, you may say, yes, it's a very nice idea. But you won't do it because you don't have a relationship with them that would induce you to work very hard. So if we take what we already have, whatever any of us have, and we think of that as the forum, as the situation in which we want to understand more about Krishna, we can do that. So if you see that I will work very hard for my wife and family because I have a relationship with them, we must therefore understand that I will not work very hard for the pleasure of Krishna unless I have a relationship with him. And that relationship is going to have to become higher than this one for me to transfer this to him. Otherwise I'll hold it as mine because it's very dear to my heart. So he must become more dear to my heart. So then the question becomes in Yukta Vairagya, how am I going to get that? And when that question arises, then that's considered the beginning of humanity. One's a human being on that platform. Under that platform, one's working with uncontrolled senses. This is mine, this is mine. I'm working hard, discipline is there, but it's all for me. But when we want to say, how can I make this change? I first of all have to understand who is Krishna, what is my relationship with him, and why I should love him. Why he is so lovable to the soul. So the first thing that comes into Yukta Vairagya is knowledge. You have to have proper knowledge, tattva. And then, as you're working and you gain this knowledge, so where do we gain knowledge of Krishna from?
Shastra.
Spiritual master is speaking Shastra. Prabhupada says it is Shastra. Everything comes from Shastra. One time, one of his disciples, I think his name was Purushottam, he didn't believe that the spaceships hadn't gone to the moon. This really completely, he was scientifically based, and this completely disturbed him so much. And they even had a television set, it was I think in England, and they were watching it, and Prabhupada was saying they didn't go. And he became so disturbed that he left Krishna consciousness as a result. And Prabhupada's simple answer when asked about it was, he said, I can understand that he didn't believe me, but Shastra said it. How can he not understand? Shastra said it. It comes from Shastra. So how important the Shastra is. Shastra is like mother. Krishna is like father. Shastra is like mother. You ask the mother, who's my father? You can't tell by yourself. Your mother might have had some affair And you might not be. You don't know anything. You weren't there. But Shastra can tell you. So your mother can say, yeah, this is your father. So Shastra has to be there. We have to hear about Krishna. And by that hearing process, then we develop a sense of attachment and love develops. But now we must stop and keep our schedule, and you're going to hear a lot more about Krishna today. Thank you very much. Bye.